Good morning and welcome to the West Side on this October 16th, 2020, where we got to scrape the frost off our windshields this morning and we're getting reports of snow in some parts of western Wisconsin. Terms in Wisconsin State Senate are 4 years. In 2020, the even-numbered districts are up, and only one of those districts is in western Wisconsin. But that district, the 10th, is the most interesting race in the state. The current Senator, Patty Shockner of Somerset, became the first Democrat to hold the seat since the turn of the century when she won a special election 2 years ago. Now in her first general election, she faces a fellow legislator, 29th District State Representative Rob Stafschult of New Richmond. Poll watchers around Wisconsin have identified the race as a key bellwether as to how Wisconsin and even the country might go in 2020. But for the western Wisconsinites who live in the 10th, they want to know where their next senator stands on the issues. That's what we're going to find out today. It's the 10th Senate debate today on the West Side. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Our guests today are Rob Stafschult of New Richmond. His business background includes food manufacturing, banking, real estate, and starting and running a waste disposal company. He's a fourth-generation farmer and a lifelong resident of St. Croix County. He has a teenage daughter, and he's currently in his second term in the state legislature as the 29th Assembly Representative. He beat Cherie Link of Somerset in the August primary for his place on next month's Senate ballot. Rob Stafschult, good to have you with us today.
Thanks for having us, Dean. I appreciate the effort.
Patty Shockner of Somerset is the other candidate in the race. She's also a lifelong resident of western Wisconsin. She's served in the past as supervisor for the town of Star Prairie and as a member of the Somerset School Board. She serves on the board of the local food pantry and a center for victims of sexual and domestic abuse and continues to serve as St. Croix County's medical examiner. Again, she's seeking her first full term as a state senator. Patty Shockner, welcome to the West Side.
Thanks for having us, Dean.
The 10th Senate District includes the counties of most of St. Croix and Polk counties, actually, southwestern Burnett County and parts of north-central Pierce County and west-central Dunn County. Cities in the district include Menominee, River Falls, Hudson, New Richmond, Amory, St. Croix Falls, and Glenwood City. The district also includes the villages of Baldwin, North Hudson, Somerset, Osceola, Frederick, Hammond, Roberts, Woodville, Grantsburg, Frederick, got Frederick in there twice, Luck, Boyceville, Balsam Lake, Centuria, Milltown, Dresser, Siren, Webster, Star Prairie, Knapp, Downing, Deer Park, and Wilson. This is your chance to ask the candidates the questions that are important to you. There are two ways to reach us. Email at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Or you can call 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Rob Stafschult, you're finishing up your second term representing the 29th Assembly District. You defeated fellow Republican Cherie Link in the August primary with 64% of the vote. Talk about why you're running for state senate.
Thanks, Dean. I appreciate it. And I appreciate being able to come on the show here on the West Side. Been coming on since back in the Rich Kramer days. I'm not sure where Rich is these days, but it's always good to be on.
He's still with us and working hard.
Is he good? I was born and raised here in western Wisconsin. I lived my whole life in St. Croix County. I'm a fourth generation farmer. This is where my roots are from, my family's from. This is where we all currently live. My grandparents and great-grandparents are from little places like Emerald and Downing. And I just want to give back. I've been so honored and humbled to be the state representative from the 29th Assembly District, representing, from Hammond down to Menominee and just north of Spring Valley all the way up to the Polk-St. Croix County line. And I'd just like to take my experience as a small business owner and a farmer and a father and expand that to a little bit bigger terrain here and cover the 10th Senate District.
Very well. Patty Shockner, you're running for a second term in the state Senate after winning in the special election in 2018, actually your first full term. You're the first Democrat to hold the seat in the 10th Senate in 17 years. Why run again?
Well, I have lots of work left to do. As a lifelong resident also of northwestern Wisconsin, I want to make sure that my kids and grandkids can grow up with the same experiences and opportunities that I had. whether it's access to health care, good public schools, our clean water, and really just ensuring that we have that strong economy here in northwestern Wisconsin. You know, there's a lot of things that we can do, whether it's talking about mental health and really, you know, making sure that everyone has access to it, and including, you know, public education. It's the foundation of a strong economy. That's why, you know, public education, technical education, and making sure that they're well-funded and well-funded programs like Extension is so important as we are in the second decade of the 21st century. So I think, you know, as we want to maintain our beautiful natural resources and our culture of hunting and fishing and outdoor recreation, we have to look towards the future, what the 21st century has to offer. And that's really what has guided my principles in the work that I have done so far. I really am really a proponent of ideas and the Wisconsin idea, and really, you know, no idea is a bad idea. And that's why I believe in bipartisan work. And one of my proudest accomplishments really is the Disability Voting Rights Act that I co-authored with Representative Zimmerman, that this bill now made it possible for thousands more Wisconsinites to cast their ballot, regardless of their ability or disability. And I'm really proud of that. And, you know, as a legislator, you have to be focused on all of our constituents, and even those that are, the you know, not as impacted as others. So bipartisan work is important to me. The sexual assault bill was something I worked really hard. My work with Turning Point, and as a medical examiner, I know how domestic violence impacts people, and that bill passed through the Senate, and the Assembly chose not to prioritize that as a priority for them, but we were able to get that work done. And I think that's the key here, is getting work done. You know, when we talk about, you know, we look outside and it's snowing and we're getting ready for deer hunting, chronic wasting disease is really important, especially in these economic times where venison is going to be the key protein for a lot of our Wisconsin families. So making sure that we keep track of our herd and make sure we have the sustainability of our herd is important. That was another bill that I worked on and was not considered by the Assembly. So my work is really based on personal impact, whether it's water quality testing, to mental health, or expanding broadband for our farmers. It's really important to me that we do the work that will guide us, really springboard us into the 21st century. And then really after, I hope that after I win this re-election, that we'll be able to get more done.
That's the voice of Patty Schachner. She's the current state senator from the 10th Senate District, a Democrat from Somerset. Rob Staffschult is her opponent. He is currently the 29th State Assembly District Representative, and he's running as a Republican against Patty Schachner. He is from New Richmond. 800-228-5615 is the number you can call to be part of the program, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And we have some callers and emails lined up already, but I want to first get to the issue that's top of mind, make sure we get to it right away. This week, the Deputy Secretary of Wisconsin's Department of Health Services told the media that we're entering another wave of the coronavirus pandemic in Wisconsin. As of yesterday, the counties in the 10th Senate District, Polk, St. Croix, Burnett, Pierce, Dunn, had a combined total of over 32,000 positive cases and 23 deaths so far. Patty Schachner, what measures would you support as a state senator in response to the pandemic?
Well, I think the pandemic has really shown the cracks in our society. One of those has been the lack of broadband access for our students and for our workforce. You know, we have 736 people in Wisconsin without access to internet. And what this pandemic has showed us is really that we're not prepared. And that is a choice through policy. So I really think that when we look at COVID, we have to look at it. In the pandemic, we have to look at it from a big perspective and really find the get back to work as legislators and look at the fiber to farm bills, look at the bills that are going to help us get to where we need to be. That's really how I look at this here topic.
And a correction, the counties I mentioned, I think I said 32,000 positive cases, 3,200. I saw an extra zero where I shouldn't have seen one, but still plenty of cases. And new reports of COVID-19 cases once again set a single-day record in Wisconsin. We heard Hannah Hayes talking about it earlier in the newscast, and that's based on the latest data reported by the state. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention lists Wisconsin as one of the top five states in the nation in the number of new coronavirus cases. And as we heard in the newscast, Governor Evers has called on the Republican-led legislature to take steps to mitigate the spread of the virus in Wisconsin. Yet every day we hear of a new court case where Republican-backed groups are trying to stop the governor's office from imposing mandates like that. Rob Staffschult, why doesn't your party get back in session and do something if you don't like what the governor's been doing?
You know, Dean, I think that's a fair question, and I think we need to clarify what you said, is that by nature, the lawsuits and the court cases and the things that you see are not necessarily against the COVID or against the mask. What they are is against unlawful government overreach by Governor Evers. We just want to make sure that he follows the law like everybody else and that nobody is above the law. If he doesn't have the authority, we'd be more than happy to entertain working together and come up with solutions like we did in the past. Honestly, one of the most proud moments that I was a part of in my 2 years in session, two terms in as a state legislature, two different sessions, is when we passed the COVID relief bill early this spring, because it truly was probably the most bipartisan bill that I got to work with. There was things on the Republican side that were just kind of lines in the sand that we weren't going to compromise on, and we told those to the Democrats on the other side of the aisle, and they then told us, here's some things that we just can't compromise, and we just kind of took those off the table. It took the things we really could work with together, and we came out with this COVID relief bill, which was like 50 pages long, don't hold me to that, but about 50 pages long and covered lots and lots of different topics. It made it so that we voted to allow the state of Wisconsin to be able to accept the Federal CARES Act money so that we could have Governor Evers have the ability to take that in, and then he had sole discretion as to where it went. So, I think Patty talked about internet, and I think that internet is internet and the ability to connect has become just vital in our daily lives, whether it's for your small business or if you have a manufacturing center or if it's your kids' education, which a lot of those are now at home and doing virtual things. And the other thing that I think we've seen during COVID is how the internet and the ability to connect to the internet is really allowed people to stay in contact with family members during times when maybe in person and in large groups or going to see grandma and grandpa in the nursing home isn't the right decision or isn't even allowed. And I voted for $44 million in rural broadband expansion in the last session. Patty voted against that bill. And so when you're talking about broadband expansion, you kind of got to walk the walk. My first session, I brought the broadband director up into the district, toured and went to a couple different townships across my assembly district and talked to the townships about what the process is for applying for those grants to make sure that Northwest Wisconsin has the ability to compete with those grants and get our fair share of the money, or hopefully even more than our fair share of the money. So your original question kind of went back to COVID. And I just want to say, doing this job, and I think Patty will agree with me, is you get to see how truly remarkable so many people are in the 10th Senate District and the 29th Assembly District. We have lots of local examples, Five Loaves, Food Shelf, Grace Place, Ruby's Pantry, Empty Bowls. All of these things go on every year. But during a pandemic like this, it's just so awesome to see the great people of the 10th Senate District come together, support the community, because, COVID's presented a unique challenge on both our healthcare system and kind of our social safety net and how we deal with those things. So it's been an interesting time, and I'm excited to continue to work on that.
That's the voice of Rob Staffschult. He's the Republican from New Richmond running for 10th State Senate District. The incumbent in the race is Patty Schachner. She is from Somerset, and your voice can be heard in today's debate as well. You can join us with your question at 800-228-5615 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We have Bob from Osceola on the line, and we'll hear from him after the break. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. Today's debate is between the candidates in the 10th Senate District, Patty Schachner, the Democrat from Somerset, who is the incumbent, and Rob Staffschult, the current state representative in the 29th District. The New Richmond Republican is running against her in the fall election. We're taking your calls at 800-228-5615, and we open with the first call today from Bob in Osceola. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning, everyone. How are you?
We're doing well.
Good. My question is regarding public education. And when the pandemic first hit last spring, our public schools really demonstrated their values to the communities. Teachers learned remote learning in real time. Food service workers put out hundreds of thousands of meals delivered by bus drivers. And custodians and administrators kept the gears turning. And right now they need our support more than ever. You know, the governor has been trying, yet the legislature has not met in over 6 months and has spent $2 million in legal fees opposing everything he's tried. I know both of you are currently in the legislature, and my question is twofold. One is, like, do you support this approach? And please explain your answer. And the second part of that is, if you were in, you were the majority leader in your respective body, the Assembly or the Senate, how would you approach this? And I would note that Rob did not respond to a questionnaire regarding public education that was sent out the last couple of weeks. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob. Public school funding in particular is one of the state budget's largest spending categories. Rob Staffschult, how should the state support public schools, especially those in rural areas?
Yeah, you know, I've been in the legislature, I've only been there two terms, but I've been a strong supporter of K-12 and secondary education. My mom was a teacher at WITC up here in New Richmond, the technical college, which back in that day was still WITI before it was a technical college. And I went to college both in Eau Claire and UW River Falls. So UW River Falls being in the district, and I've represented UW Stout for the last two terms. Speaking specifically about K-12, you know, in the last budget, I'm proud of what we did in the last budget. We had the largest total investment in K-12 funding. I believe we had a total spending of $12.3 billion. If you think about that, that's $12.3 billion that's only spent on K-12 out of the state's budget. We had a $500 million increase just in the last 2 years, which is about, I believe, just a shade over $604 per student over those 2 years. And again, we talked a little bit before about the rural broadband. I think that's critically important. So I voted in favor of $44 million to increase rural broadband. And one of the things that we go to these CISA 11 meetings, Patty and I do, and all the other state legislators on the Senate and the Assembly. So we will go to the CISA 11 meetings up in Turtle Lake, and they talk to us about the needs and the things that they're hearing in the classroom. And just, it's a great meeting, and I look forward to it every year because it's a good exchange of ideas and what the true needs are. And one of the things that we heard in that meeting is that we needed additional funds for special education. So in this last budget, I supported a $100 million increase for special education. And in fact, we doubled the funding for the student mental health programs. So I've stood by K-12, and I will continue to do that. I think it's critical to our small communities. And the reason I think it is because these kids get quality educations, and then they get good jobs. Hopefully those good jobs are right here in our district, and those kids get to stay here. We don't see them head off to Minneapolis or Chicago or who knows where. They get to stay here next to their loved ones, and we sure hope that they stay here next to us. So I'm proud of that, and I'll continue to do that.
Patty Schachner, talk about public school spending. How can that spending be done effectively and in keeping with the needs of, and responsibilities of the public schools, especially rural schools?
So my opponent talks about how proud he is of his recent investments, but what he doesn't say is what it was like after a decade of historic cuts and mutilation to public education, which is what got us to where we are today. We have, under the majority party, the lowest reading comprehension of African American students in the state, or in the nation, excuse me. That doesn't happen because you invested in public education. When I look at public education, I look at education as an investment into the future, into it, and the economy, and not as a tax liability. Far too long, the majority of party has used our children to be a tax liability and not the economic driver of our community. For people like me and most people here in District 10 that attend public school, I was very proud to not only attend a public school, but be able to utilize all the services that come with public education. And that includes investing in technical training. When you look at what's going on now in our schools, there's so many great programs going on that articulate technical schools in the community. We have to grow that if we want our kids and our students to stay here. We have to give them a reason to stay here. When we don't invest in public education, what do you think that tells students, especially when they do make the decision to go get advanced training somewhere else? They look back at what the investment was at home. And I think that as we look at public education, we need fully funded public education. We need to make sure that our students are competitive in that not only District 10 and not only the state, but in the United States. They have to have a reason to come back here. That's why broadband is so important. That's why health care is so important. That's why clean water is so important. We need to show our young people as they grow up and become young citizens that we, the legislature, are willing to invest in our future. So it's important that we fully invest, and in a proof of how the impacts of policy are, when I was on the school board, it was really hard to make decisions on cuts based on the overall cuts that this legislature or the majority legislature did, because they chose to put our kids second to Foxconn. That was a decision that they made, and my opponent proudly voted for that. So to sit here and say that he supports education, that's just a pile of, well, you know, and that. So let's talk about what hardworking rural schools do. Look at Boysville. Boysville has made a decision that they are going to really invest in their students, and they have a top-notch program and for the Science Olympiad, and I am proud to be a supporter of that program. But we have to invest in education, and we have to invest to make sure that our kids, who are our future, feel that they are invested in. And when we have kids that don't have access to internet, that don't have access to new curriculum, that don't have access to special needs programs, that don't have access to food, that is because of policy that put our kids last. And for anyone to sit there and expect the rest of us to believe that now all of a sudden the majority party cares about education, you know what? We're voters and we all had a public education and we know how to sift through the facts.
So speaking of public school funding, what's not covered by state taxes generally is covered by property taxes, and that's a topic Troy from Star Prairie emailed about. Here's what he says. I live in Stanton Township. Over the last 5 years, my property taxes have risen just over 30%. I was assessed in March of 2019, but to my surprise, I received a letter from the township's assessor in March of 2020 saying that with the sales for 2019 coming in 15% higher than anticipated, I needed to increase the assessments for 2020 in order to be in compliance with the state. So the net change of assessment from 2019 to 2020 is almost $68,000. My taxes will be going up again next year. What are you doing or planning to do if you were to win to help with skyrocketing property taxes. And Patty Schachner, what can be done for folks like Troy?
Well, again, these are policies that have been set up that help through tax breaks and tax credits like Foxconn and, really bait and switch taxes. As someone who sat on the town board in Star Prairie, I'm the only one between the two of us that actually knows what happened when the impacts of bad policy. And for example, when you look at the needs of our township, you take that budget and you divide it into three. And one third goes to just the overall infrastructure of the township, the clerk, the paying for the voting, all that there comes out of one third of the budget. One third goes to mandated public protection, and one third goes to transportation. Because we have continually, that through bad policy, which my opponent has repeatedly been a proponent of cutting these here infrastructure programs. And then all of a sudden, of course, they always want to say, well, we did the biggest improvement or increase in the last budget. Well, isn't it amazing when you finally did an increase was when you had a Democratic governor? So you didn't think about it when you were in full control. But now that you have a Democratic governor, you come up with these ideas that you know are going to be controversial and can be campaign related. So when you look at today and you look at our local township budgets and you see the snow, what you should be doing is asking your town supervisor how much it costs to do snow removal every year. And remember that we have no way to predict that. So if you have five or six snow events from January to March or May, and that use up all your road budget for road budget, and then you have three or four more from October to December, you can be in the red in your transportation budget before it even starts. And that's why the taxes go up. So you have to look at the infrastructure of your community and your township to figure out how we are going to maintain our roads, maintain our infrastructure, so that we can keep our taxes at a reasonable rate by continually taking local control away. And our policymakers and majority in the last decade or so have taken 180 pieces of legislation that took local control away. And then they also, at the same time, put on freezes so that nothing can be done. And this is why we're in this mess right now. So bad policy has made it so when it comes to figuring out how to address our local issues, there's not a whole lot that we can do. But we can thank the majority party for this mess.
Rob Staff-Schult, what's your plan for dealing with escalating property taxes?
Well, Dean, I think it's interesting that my opponent likes to talk about the last decade of things, but she knows. And number one, I like Patty. Patty's a good person. We obviously completely disagree on some policy and directions to take in our state. But at the end of the day, I think we both think each other are a good person. But she knows that I've only been in office for 12 months longer than she has. So to try to tie me to something that happened a decade ago, I think is a little bit of a farce. And I think if you're talking about what's factual, in the 2017-18 budget, I voted in favor of a K-12 funding increase there, too. So it's not like we cut them in 2017 and brought them back in 19. I voted in favor of K-12 funding increases both terms I've been in. You talk about, what you say versus what you do. Patty, you know that you voted against $44 million worth of broadband expansion, and you also talk about mental health and all the things we need to do, but you voted against $15 million facility for mental health in Eau Claire, which would have greatly impacted the 10th Senate District. So I think we should stick to the facts and the policy. As for taxes,
well, I think if you're going to talk about a $15 million...
Are we going to start interrupting each other, or do you want me to let you go?
Well, I'm going to just be truthful and say the $15 million earmark, which wasn't substantive, would not have actually helped here in western Wisconsin when we need people who actually can can have access to care locally. That's the issue, local care.
Representative Safshall, go ahead and finish your point.
So if the decision is between, so what we're talking about, for those that don't know, is Chapter 51 emergency detentions for people that are in a mental health crisis, and that's a long term, but basically it's something that involves law enforcement. You're taken into custody because you are likely to harm yourself or others, and so there's a 72-hour hold. And currently it's an atrocious policy that happens in western Wisconsin, not just St. Croix County. And I've worked with law enforcement both terms I've been there trying to find a solution. It's just really tough to do because those people right now, most of the time, not every time, but most of the time, get put in a squad car and handcuffs in the back seat, and we haul them all the way over to Winnebago, 4 or 5 hours away. And then when they're there, we go back and we pick them up and we haul them all the way back across the state the next day or a couple days later for their initial court appearance. And if the judge says, yeah, we think you should be there for a few days, then we haul them all the way back over there again. And then one thing I found out that's probably the most atrocious to me is once they're there, after their treatment, there's no trigger mechanism for us to pick them up. So then we leave them over there. So what we're trying to do is find solutions to keep people closer to home, where their support systems are, where their family is. And the facility would have been in Eau Claire. I consider that to be an hour away from most of the 10th Senate District, maybe 2 hours to the farthest part. But it's a heck of a lot closer than Winnebago. And it allows those people to get treatment, and it allows those people to be closer to family and closer to their support network. And it also allows those people that when they come out of their stay there, there's some post-treatment. And that's a lot harder to do if you came from Winnebago than if you came from Eau Claire, follow-up visits, and trying to make sure that those people don't end up in that same situation again. I think that's key. Patty has some good points about the prevention side of things. We've talked about that, and we've worked on some of that stuff together as well. And of course, we hope that people never end up in that situation, but the fact of the matter is that they do, and currently we're hauling them all the way across the state to Winnebago. And there was $15 million in the budget that would have expanded a facility in Eau Claire to keep those people closer to home, and Patty voted against that.
Well, if I can just add to that, that had the majority party accepted the Medicaid expansion, we would have been able to help everybody with mental health, kept folks local, not invested the time and energy for our law enforcement in overtime. It would have been a actual cost saving all the way around by just doing one simple thing, which would be accepting the Medicaid expansion. It would have helped everybody.
We're going to get more broadly into health care access coming up after the break. We have a caller, Jane, who's been on hold, and we're going to let her come in to talk about that after the break. Our candidates for the 10th Senate District in our debate today are State Senator Patty Schachner, running for her first full term. She's from Somerset. And State Representative Rob Stafschult, he's from New Richmond, and he's on the Republican ticket running against Patty Schachner. Still time to hear from you. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or call 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back with the candidates in the 10th Senate District, Patty Schachner, the incumbent Democrat, and Rob Stafschult, the Republican challenger. And we're glad to have you with us. And let's bring in a caller, Jane. Jane is with us from New Richmond. Jane, thanks for joining the West Side.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. I'm wondering, how will Senator Patty and Assemblyman Rob approach expanding health care access, and how will they make sure people with pre-existing conditions get covered?
Thank you, Jane. We also had some email questions, and I'll mention that the League of Women Voters of the Greater Chippewa Valley had tried to stage a debate. It didn't work out from a scheduling standpoint, but they did share some of the emails that they had gotten in anticipation of that debate. And both Stephanie and Elizabeth shared an email question from the League of Women Voters asking both candidates if they would vote to accept the Medicaid expansion from the federal government to lower-income people who don't have the option for insurance through their employer. So with Jane's question regarding access and pre-existing conditions and the Medicaid expansion, Rob Stachel, Scott Walker originally rejected the federal funds for Medicaid expansion. That's kind of where we are now. Has the time come to take that money?
Thanks, Dean. You know, there's a few things we need to talk about when we talk about the Medicaid expansion. Of the states in the United States that have not taken that expansion, I think it's critical to understand that Wisconsin has no coverage gap. Wisconsin's Medicaid program covers individuals from the 0 to 100% of the FPL, federal poverty level.
Sorry about that. That was just dropped off the line, and I had her up, so go ahead.
Okay. I thought I dropped off.
Nope.
The Wisconsin's Medicaid program covers individuals from 0 to 100% of the federal poverty level. That's pretty unique compared to the other states that haven't taken the expansion. The federal marketplace covers individuals who make an income between 100 and 138% of the federal poverty level. So by accepting this Medicaid expansion, it takes the individuals between that 100 and 138% of the FPL who are currently on private insurance, and it moves them onto a government-run program. So let's look at if we took that expansion of the roughly in Wisconsin, there'd be about 82,000 people that would fall under this new bracket, and half of those people are already covered on the individual market. So now you're talking about roughly 40,000 people that you're going to take off the market, and that only makes the program even more unsustainable and more costly. The premiums would likely spike dramatically for those that remain on the market. When you have fewer people paying for a larger number of people, the people that are paying have to pay more. I think we all understand that. And so far in Wisconsin, we've been able to guarantee Wisconsinites access to the health care without expanding that government share. As of right now, I'm not in favor of expanding the Medicaid because I just don't think we need it in Wisconsin.
Patty Schachner, should we expand Medicaid, and what about pre-existing conditions?
So on paper, my opponent's argument seems to make sense, but I work in the real world. I work with people all the time that suffer from the ramifications of not taking the Medicaid expansion. Being someone who has worked in healthcare pretty much my whole life, I know what lack of access has done to people in northwestern Wisconsin and what it has done to our healthcare infrastructure. We need to make sure that everyone can get coverage regardless of their pre-existing conditions. We need to take the Medicaid expansion. 70% of Wisconsinites in a recent Marquette poll want us to take it. I know that friends on the other side think they know better than most people in Wisconsin, but Wisconsinites are saying, take the Medicaid expansion. It's our money. It's our money that is going to other states. So we need to take it, and we need to look at our system right now and really think about new approaches to mental health care and to health care. We need to really focus on prevention and treatment and not always reaction. It's always far more effective and cost-effective to work on prevention than it is to be do reactive health care. I've seen, you know, as a death investigator, I've been on the front lines. I know what it looks like not to have access to health care, whether it's mental health care, addiction care, long-term wound care, untreated diabetes, making decisions for cancer. I've seen it firsthand. So when I have a bunch of people in the state house trying to explain to me what it looks like when they've never actually looked at it or seen it themselves, when they've never actually talked to a family member who is in tears, talking about how hard it was to try to get health care for their adult child with mental health and how they could not do it because the disease that was inflicting their brain was so bad they could not advocate for themselves, yet they had the ability to be themselves. It's very, very, very hard. So that's why when we've seen bad policy by not taking the Medicaid extension, why myself and other folks in St. Croix County had to create the suicide task force of St. Croix County, because we had to do the work that policymakers wouldn't do. And you know what? People that are doing these prevention nonprofits were tired. We're tired of doing the work that policymakers are afraid to do. We need to make a real investment in healthcare. We need to make a real investment in overall healthcare. We need to make an investment in helping our hospitals throughout rural Wisconsin. We need to look at our nursing homes. You know, when we put a dollar on our most vulnerable, whether it's those struggling with mental health, those struggling with disabilities, those struggling in poverty, and we do a cost and effect analysis on it, someday we ourselves might be in that cost and effect analysis. And we have to look at, you know, what this really means. So accepting the Medicaid expansion is not just the right thing to do, it is the best thing to do for Wisconsinites. Because if one Wisconsinite has to make the decision between having health care or living, that's one Wisconsinite too many.
We've got just a few minutes left, and we've got several questions. I'd like to cover as many as possible, so I'll just ask the candidates, be as concise as you can be, certainly be complete, but be as concise as you can be. I'd like to bring Jill in next. Jill from River Falls, go ahead.
Hi, I have a question regarding CAFOs, or concentrated animal feeding operations, also known as factory farms. As you both know, there is a large CAFO called Emerald Sky Dairy in Emerald Township, of which there have been significant violations with respect to rules, and it's impacted the quality of water of individuals living there, and certainly the groundwater for those of us that live closer to the St. Croix River, the Kinnikinick River, the Willow, and so forth. I would like to know what you can do and are doing to bring these owners to task in terms of violating rules and procedures, and also to address the issue of how these huge factory farms, CAFOs, impact the smaller dairy farm economically. Thank you.
Patty Schachner, you first on the question of CAFOs. Thank you, Jill.
This is a prime example of what happens when you take local control away from your local boards and put it at the state level. The people who live in the area know what matters, and the system that we have now does not advocate for our local folks. Why that I did the bill on water testing, because if all this local control was taken away, the least that we can do is make sure that our folks have clean drinking water and that they're not drinking the animal fecal matter because of the policies took that control away. So I don't know, anything that can help inform our constituents as to how clean their water is a good thing for me. So,
Rob Staff-Schultz, do CAFOs need more regulation and monitoring?
You know, CAFOs are, and people don't know this sometimes, but CAFOs are the most regulated farming practice. They, once you get to a certain size, the DNR come in and regulate your manure spreading activities, and I've toured some of those. I toured some of those with the study group in St. Croix County to understand more about how they operate and what their regulations are. It's a lot of kind of high tech technology that shows where they can spread, you know, X amount of pounds of manure on the high end and more on the bottom. So that being said, Emerald Sky Dairy has had some problems, and I don't defend them at all. I think they've brought that on themselves. I think they had an instance where they failed to report it, even though they knew they had it. And those are the kinds of situations that we just can't put up with. If we want to talk about increased penalties or a more severe system for the real bad actors, because most of our farmers, I mean, I'm a fourth generation farmer too. We don't have any animals. We're crop farmers, but my neighbors are farmers. I have plenty of neighbors and friends that are in agriculture and have cattle, and some of them are larger operations, some are smaller operations. But, you know, it's just like most things. Most, by far, 99% of them are all good actors. You always have that one bad actor, and if we want to increase penalties and responsibilities of those people, I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, we're down to the closing minutes, and I think we've got time for one last question. I want to ask a question that we have several emails about. We've got William from Frederick. We've got Carolyn from Osceola. We have Anne Marie, all asking essentially the question relating to redistricting. Governor Evers' People's Maps Commission has started hosting public hearings as part of a larger effort to redraw Wisconsin's political lines in a bipartisan effort. And a supermajority of voters, according to our emailers in Wisconsin, want to see a nonpartisan redistricting in place. Rob Staff-Schultz, in 30 seconds, what model of redistricting do you favor and why?
You know, I think when you talk about a different model of redistricting, it's key to understand that when you try to find a nonpartisan panel of folks to do that, somebody appoints those people to that panel. So I think the practicality of figuring out how to create that is a problem. If the Republican-controlled legislature picks the panel, the Democrats are going to say that they're skewed one way. If Governor Evers, the Democrat governor, picks that panel, the Republican legislature is going to say it's skewed one day. So the problem is trying to figure out how to make a nonpartisan panel. So, you know, it's an imperfect system. And I'd like to point out that sometimes they say when you draw those maps that it makes it so, like currently the Democrats are not in control, that they can't win seats. And if that was the case, Patty Schachner wouldn't be our senator right now. So elections have changes, and when the other party's in power, they drew the maps. And now that Republicans are in party, they drew the maps. I'm open to the discussion on redistricting and a nonpartisan panel of people to do that, but I don't know how you effectively get to a nonpartisan panel.
Patty
somebody has to appoint them.
Patty Schachner, in 30 seconds, your redistricting philosophy.
So I think with all the counties that have passed redistricting referendums, it tells us that people want this. I've written a fair map bill. I know that this is what the voters want and our constituents want. So only people that are afraid of fair maps don't want fair maps. I say bring it on.
That's the voice of Patty Schachner. She is the state senator, a Democrat from Somerset. Rob Staff-Schultz is the Republican. He is the state representative in the 29th district running against Patty Schachner in the 10th Senate district, and he's from New Richmond. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks, Dean. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Catherine Thomas produced today's program. Transcriptions are provided by Sue Johnson and Bonnie Clark. Patrick Eikens and Kate Spranger manage our publicity and our archives. Next week, we wrap up our series of 11 legislative debates with the race in the 91st Assembly District with two Eau Claire candidates, Republican Charlie Walker and Democrat incumbent Jody Emerson. Join us for that one. I'm Dean Kallenbach. You've been listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.